Dr. Hoffman here. This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Super Beets. Beets are a nutritional gold mine, full of antioxidants and nutrients, but they're a mess to prepare. So just mix Super Beets with 4 ounces of water and boost circulation, relax arteries, and maintain healthy blood pressure. Get the Dr. Hoffman special offer at intelligentbeets.com. That's intelligentbeets.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it's once again time for Q&A with Layla, a special edition of Q&A with Layla for holiday time, because we want to wish you all a very happy Thanksgiving holiday. And so how are you doing, Layla?
Okay. How are you doing?
Good, good. So this week, approximately the time that people hear this podcast will be released, we're distributing an article on our newsletter about survival tips for the holidays. And we've got some nutritional and lifestyle survival tips, because the holidays are, you know, kind of a stressful time. You know, it's on your mark, get set, go, you know, go to a lot of parties, eat a lot of bad food, drink a lot of booze, do a lot of shopping, get stressed out because you're worried about maxing out your credit card and the consequences of January, and a lot of family obligations. Sometimes, you know, family is, we tend to idealize family, you know, like it's going to be really great. And then it turns out that maybe it's not quite up to our ideals, and then it's dark and it's cold and it's you know, so it says a lot of factors that kind of conspired to make our holidays stressful and promote the holiday blahs and the holiday blues. So I'll talk about that in my article this week that's going to go out via our newsletter. Go to drhoffman.com, sign up for the newsletter, because we've got lots of useful tips there. And of course we publish, I mean, if you don't want to sign up for the newsletter, I don't know, maybe you're one of these people who just doesn't want to give out your email, although we don't bombard you with advertisements and solicitations. We respect your privacy. But if you don't want to give out your email, just check out drhoffman.com for all the articles that we ultimately publish in our newsletter. So, all right, so what do you have planned for Thanksgiving?
Oh, it's going to be at my mother's this year, which will be a whole lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
So
whereabouts is that? Is that in near New York City?
In my neighborhood, and she's very close by in Sunnyside. So
Sunnyside, Queens. Okay.
Yeah.
For our listening audience, it's a few miles outside of Manhattan on the number 7 train, right?
Right, the number 7 train,
the famous number 7 train, which takes you to, of course, Shea Stadium, right?
Yes.
But on the way, you can stop off at Layla's
City Field.
Yeah. City Field. We don't call it Shea Stadium anymore. It's a, we don't look. The 59th Street Bridge is the Koch Bridge. 6th Avenue is Avenue of the Americas, and Shea Stadium is City Field. But I refuse to acknowledge that. I'm just an old line New Yorker.
I like Shea Stadium myself.
Indeed.
That's where the Beatles performed. So.
Oh my goodness.
I was just a newborn, but whatever.
I was actually, I was conscious. I was a prepubescent when the Beatles made it. And I did pay attention to one aspect of the Beatles tour, is the girls went crazy.
Oh, my God.
And I thought, you know, even in my prepubescent, I was probably about 4'11". I don't think I even had my bar mitzvah when the Beatles played. But I noticed that the girls went nuts for those guys. And I thought, there's really something to this. There's something to this, right? They just went out of their gourds.
I mean, they couldn't even hear the music above their own screaming.
Screaming, right.
Wow.
Just
faint.
Really, so, speaking of celebrities, I've got some nutritional news. You know, Bill Clinton and his new diet forays. You know, I saw pictures of Bill Clinton after he adopted his vegan diet, you know, the ultra low-fat diet. And he didn't look good. It almost looked like, get a better size suit, you know, he looked sort of gaunt and pale,
colorless
and desiccated. And so I'm pleased to see that this has changed. Here's a little celebrity gossip story. Ex-vegans Anne Hathaway, you know, Anne Hathaway, the actress?
Yeah.
She just was in the movie Interstellar. And okay. I saw that with Matthew McConaughey. So I've, you know, look, I was a very interesting movie. It was a little too long. It was a little too complicated. You know, it was a little too weird. But
I'm
going to
go see Mockingjay.
Yeah. Oh, of course, everybody's got to go see that.
Yeah.
That's
Travis,
I mean,
Katniss.
Yeah, Katniss, right? The latest, you know, it's like, you know, fighting back against the establishment. I love that theme. So,
yeah.
But anyway, so headline: ex-vegans Anne Hathaway and Bill Clinton praise paleo-style low-carb diets for energy and weight loss. And
wow.
Here's a picture of Anne Hathaway looking svelte, and she was like an ultra-vegan. And this is what she had to say. Hathaway's decision to shift to a paleo diet style food plan occurred just before she turned 32. Hathaway recently confessed that eating endless meals of tofu and garbanzo beans seemed to be sapping her energy. She told The Insider, that's this celebrity rag that I'm reading from here,
yeah.
that when she was filming Interstellar, the action-packed scenes overwhelmed her. Seeking a solution, because she had to walk around in a 40-pound spacesuit, you know, for these, like, scenes.
Oh.
So, it's very grueling, physically grueling. So, when she was filming Interstellar, the action-packed scenes overwhelmed her. Seeking a solution, Hathaway decided to try feasting on fish and shifting to a low-carb diet. The decision to push away all those plant-based platters and experiment with animal protein-powered plan came in the middle of filming a water scene, which required that she suit up in a heavy garment. She said, I fell off so hard, so you imagine what that's like, what it's like running through water, and then you wear a 40-pound suit on top of it. So for me, it was intense. I was facing my life. I don't know how many days in a row of, like, garbanzo beans on a plate. And so with an apology to PETA, Hathaway says that she doesn't plan to return to her vegan lifestyle. She even dug into a plate of eggs and sausage during a recent Harper's Bazaar interview.
Wonderful.
Anne noted that the difference between eating a vegan diet and consuming animal protein was notable overnight. She says, quote, I just didn't feel good or healthy, recalling her vegan days. Now, Bill Clinton, another story. And I see a picture of him, and he's looking a little better. He's lost a lot of weight, but he doesn't look like he's on death's door anymore. I mean, part of it is he's tanked. Yeah, he was tanked up on a lot of heart medications, but he was also eating virtually no fats. He was under the influence of, I guess it was,
His body was starving.
You know, that Dr. Caswell Esselstein, he was like he was on speed dial to Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton said, what do I have for lunch? And he would say, have some bean sprouts. And, you can imagine Bill Clinton, good old boy, you know, used to, like, enjoy his greasy hamburger. He's eating bean sprouts. That didn't work out well. So here's what they say. For Bill Clinton, the decision to halt a vegan lifestyle and choose a paleo-style, low-carb, high-protein diet occurred when his wife, Hillary of the 2016 presidential run, presumably, introduced him to Dr. Mark Hyman. This, according to the New York Times. Dr. Mark Hyman, of course, is one of our good colleagues who now advocates, he's more about restricting carbs and encouraging healthy proteins. We're clearly on a similar path. Dr. Hyman told the former president that his vegan diet contained too much starch and insufficient good quality protein, and he also contended that weight loss is more difficult for vegans. Pretty much. Oh, if this is what's going to happen is if you vote for Hillary Clinton, you're going to get a twofer, because if Mrs. Clinton decides to run for president, Dr. Hyman is prepared with travel snacks. He will be like the personal. That's a pretty good gig. You get to go on like Air Force One and like be the personal dietitian to the president. Yeah, that could work.
Oh, my goodness.
That could work.
Wow.
Hey, by the way, I'm available. Wow. I'm available as personal dietitian, but I don't know which political candidate would want to hire me on as, you know.
Okay. You've got your resume out there. Okay.
Maybe somebody from the Green Tea Party. Not the Tea Party.
Oh,
but the
Green
the,
Tea Party.
We started a new
good.
Party. The Green Tea Party. You know, let's have a Green Tea Party. You know, freedom of choice in medicine and healthy foods. Low-carb diet.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, this is all the buzz. So now you have the celebrity diet news. What more do you need than that, right? Well, we're going to still answer some questions. But celebrity diet gossip, there's a place for that. I'm glad to see our diet is – I mean, look, I don't I personally don't think the stars and celebrities are rocket scientists when it comes to health choices and diet selections. They tend to be pretty, they just don't apply a lot of analytical thought to their diet choices. However, you know, what works, works. And if you have a rigorous political campaign schedule, or if you've got a rigorous movie filming schedule, and you don't feel well on your diet, you're forced to make changes, as much as you may be idealistic about plant-based diet.
That should be completely, that's evidence for anybody. If you don't feel well on your current diet, then that current diet isn't working for you or your biochemistry. So time to change it up.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
And hopefully under supervision with somebody credentialed, yeah.
Right, the veganism, intellectually appealing, and, you know, eat low on the food chain, save the planet, protect the animals, be humane. Mm-hmm. However, does it work for everyone? And the answer is, of course, no.
It doesn't work for everyone, exactly. I mean, Dr. Hoffman, I would love to follow a vegan diet. Do you know how much I would save on my grocery bill?
Right.
Honestly, I could put that in a mutual fund and, let's see, by the time I'm 70, but it's that. I would love to be able to follow a vegetarian lifestyle, but no.
I'll tell you, here's an example, though, where I got hit up. On this is vegetarian foods. The other day I went to the supermarket and I wanted to buy two items that are clearly vegetarian items that are ultra gourmet items. I wanted to buy chestnuts because I was going to make my own and I am about to make my own gluten-free stuffing. I'll report on that after Thanksgiving if it's any good. I'll take pictures and give the recipe. But one of the ingredients is chestnuts. And chestnuts are super expensive. It was like $13.99 for a little 8-ounce bottle of chestnuts.
Really?
And I had to buy three bottles for the amount that I'm making. And so I'm going to use gluten-free bread, and I'm going to use onions, celery, carrots, lots of spices, natural sausage. You get it in the package, and it's not in the links, because it's going to be a traditional pork, sausage, enhanced
for the stuffing. Mm-hmm.
Right? And but the most expensive ingredient was vegetarian ingredient. Then I had a dish. There was a Moroccan dish, and I had to get some saffron. And I swear, I get the spice container. Really expensive.
Very expensive. Yeah.
I get the spice container. It's a little tiny bottle. And inside the bottle, they don't have like a large amount of saffron. They had like this little tiny glassine envelope that had a few strands of saffron in it. And I looked
you
at this
to
and
pick
I said,
it out with tweezers, yeah.
Absolutely. And I said, oh my goodness, let me not drop a strand because that could be $1.50. And I think you could get an envelope of cocaine. Or powerful street drug, high quality heroin for a lot less. But the dish called for the saffron, and saffron's an important flavor. So, by the way, there's health benefits to saffron. It's thought to stave off cognitive decline and dementia. All right, enough banter. Perfect. People enjoy our banter, but let's get to actually substantive questions. And
okay.
a reminder, listeners, the way to get questions is email us to drhoffman, I'm sorry, to radioprogram@AOL.com. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the mailbox for questions for our weekly Q&A with Layla. We'll try to answer as many of them as we can. All right, let's go.
Okay. Our first problem is from Thomas. Dr. Hoffman, I would like to hear your opinion on liposomal vitamins. I believe in addition to C, vitamin A and vitamin E are also in the liposomal form. They would be. They're fat-soluble. The whole argument is in the blood that these vitamins are not bioavailable, but into the cell is what makes it bioavailable.
Hmm.
Also, there was a claim made at the vitamincfoundation.org by a noted Dr. Thomas Levy. He's also a lawyer. He's got a JD credential next to his name.
I have to tell you, I'm not too enchanted with Dr. Thomas Levy. I just think that some of the stuff he puts out.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know him personally, but I just see some of the stuff he puts out. He's a real proponent of vitamin C, which is great. But he goes, I think he goes over the top. And most recently, I think he's really done the supplement movement a disservice by making some wild claims that vitamin C can cure Ebola. There may be something to the fact that somebody with Ebola, you know, using a lot of vitamin C, it could increase their chance of survival. I'm down with that, but I think that
you still got to go to the hospital.
Yeah, I think it really is like piling on and exploiting a catastrophe to claim that vitamins are the answer to this terrible epidemic. I really find his approach tainted by that. So what does he say about liposomal vitamin C?
What do you think of this claim, though? He's claiming that liposomal vitamin C of 6 grams taken orally is as effective as an IV of vitamin C at 50 grams.
100% not.
He's completely off the mark.
100% not. Okay, so let's look at what this is. What is, vitamin C, first of all, is ascorbic acid. It dissolves in water, hence it's a water-soluble vitamin. Water-soluble vitamins are absorbed through the intestines, through tiny pores in the intestine. They get into the bloodstream, and then they get to the tissue. When you put any kind of supplement into liposomal form, in effect, you translate it, at least in theory, into a fat-soluble substance. Because liposomes are little tiny fatty coatings that are often made from soy-derived material. That gets some people worried, but there's not materially enough soy to create an allergy or an intolerance or increase your risk of breast cancer, for example. So we use liposomal forms of Mariva, the brand name is called Mariva, of curcumin, to increase the bioavailability of curcumin. And I think that could work. The point being that in a liposome, you absorb things into a form of transport that goes directly to the liver and then is circulated around the body. Okay? So there may be the potential for liposomes to enhance the bioavailability of certain substances, but vitamin C, you know, it's still going to be a water-soluble nutrient, you know, once the liposome breaks down. Cells don't absorb liposomes. I mean, really, there's not a mechanism for a cell to engulf a large, physically large-sized liposome. In the digestive tract, liposomes can penetrate, and they go via chylomicrons into the circulation, you know, much like fat gets absorbed. And then they circulate around, like, you know, whenever you absorb fat, you can absorb liposomes, and then that helps them circulate around, they get around. But why do that with vitamin C that's pretty well absorbed through a water-soluble mechanism? I just don't see it. I don't also see the strong clinical trials which show a very high tissue saturation. I mean, that would be the experiment to do. And this is it's easy to do. You could just say, okay, fine, give a person intravenous vitamin C, measure the blood levels, the concentration of vitamin C in the blood, and then give them 6 grams of liposomal vitamin C and see if that's equivalent to 50 grams given intravenously that bypasses the digestive tract. And I think it's going to fall short. I just don't think that research has been done.
Yeah.
It's also another way to sell an expensive form of vitamin C. I mean, we started with good old-fashioned ascorbic acid, which is harsh on the stomach. You know, there's no question it's acidic. And then we got to buffered vitamin C, which is a little more gentle on the stomach. And then they introduced ester C, which is more expensive and is thought to be more bioavailable. It's a premium form of vitamin C. It's not dirt cheap. It's moderate priced.
Yep.
And I believe that there may be some benefit to ester C. I was actually early on an endorser for ester C, like 20 years ago when it first came out. I used to do radio ads about it. And I do think there's some science to that that shows that the way that it's made helps deliver it in greater amounts to the tissue. Also, it's better tolerated than vitamin C crystals, for example, which can irritate the stomach, cause diarrhea. But, then you go to the liposomal, and that's it by an order of magnitude even more expensive. And I think it's just a way to apply a premium value to something that essentially is a pretty cheap commodity. Vitamin C is plentiful, and you can't jack up the price too much. But liposomal vitamin C will cost you a pretty penny.
Yeah.
I'm not there yet. Look, I'm open to somebody who listens to this podcast, and they got some strong evidence that liposomal vitamin C is superior and worth that incremental that price, I might be open to that. But look, something that is 30% more bioavailable and costs five times as much, that's not economical. You know, why pay that? You know, it'd have to be five times more bioavailable to pay five times as much. I mean, otherwise, you could just take more vitamin C more frequently, the regular kind.
Yeah. Okay, I hope that answers Tom's question. All right.
Yeah.
We have a question from Akea. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I wanted your personal opinions about the flu shot. I know, Dr. Hoffman, you're going to get this question a lot.
Yep.
Because we are into flu season.
Mm-hmm.
So, to get it or not to get it, and I've heard and read everything from it's only meant for those with compromised immune systems, mm-hmm. like the very young or the very elderly, and does the flu shot even use the right strain to protect us at all?
Right. Okay, so those are good points, and the answer is it depends. And also, I'm somewhat agnostic to that question because I think that the hazards of the flu shot are real, but they may be exaggerated by anti-vaccine fanatics. But the benefits, I think, are definitely exaggerated. And here's the problem. Precisely what they said is if vitamin C is designated for people who have poor immune systems, that's precisely the population that's least likely to protect, because if you have a poor immune system, you're likely not to respond well to a vaccine. There's maybe a 20% chance that the vaccine will be processed by your inefficient immune system into the antibodies necessary to repel a virus. So the very people who might benefit the most from the flu shot are least likely to respond, and the people who have a good, robust immune system who might have a mild flu or be able to resist the flu entirely, they are more likely to develop a strong reaction to the flu shot. Some people theorize that people who have great immune systems are the ones who are most likely to feel really sick when they take the flu shot, because the flu shot kindles their...
I've heard that.
Yeah, if they have, you have a vigilant immune system, it might kindle it. So there are certain circumstances where I'm not a big fan of it, and someone has an autoimmune disease like multiple sclerosis, where if we trigger some autoimmune response, that might not be good.
Not enough people know that, Dr. Hoffman. I think we need to make mention of that more often. If you have an autoimmune disease, getting a vaccine like the flu shot may not be in your best interest.
Right.
And you know what? If that person is even suspected of having an autoimmune disease, they should not have their ANA checked within 3 months of the flu shot.
Yeah, and that's
because it might come back falsely positive.
By the way, there are studies that show that taking vitamin D enhances the receptivity of the body to the flu shot. Other studies have been done with selenium and zinc and multivitamins and other nutrients and show that especially the elderly who have suppressed immunity are more likely to get a benefit from the flu shot if they have the good nutrition. So here's a bit of a conundrum, which is that pregnant women, it's been shown that pregnant women are most at risk of having serious complications of the flu and even dying, especially with some of these weird strains of the flu like the H1N1 that was a big threat years back and never really materialized, but they got a lot of people excited and alarmed. These killer flus, for some reason, are more likely to kill young people and in particular women who are pregnant. And therefore, it's highly recommended that women who are pregnant get the flu shot. And oh, by the way, if you get the flu while you're pregnant, there's a higher likelihood that your offspring may suffer problems, such as schizophrenia has been linked to maternal flu.
In the first trimester, I think, if you get the flu.
However, what are you going to do when the flu shot is made preserved with mercury? And do you really want to introduce that into the body of the pregnant? So this is a dilemma. And kind of glad that I'm not a woman of reproductive age, because I'd have to face that question to get the flu shot or not.
We had a patient come in here today. She's here for optimization. She wants to get pregnant.
Yeah.
And one of the things that you're doing is you're checking for urine toxic metals to make sure she's not overloaded with any toxic metals. So, that's a good thing to
do. Why add to that burden, with flu shots?
Right.
So,
anyway.
There's a lot of vaccine controversy. I'll comment on this briefly. There is an intrepid reporter named Cheryl Atkinson who just got fired from CBS because she was making waves. And she was making waves particularly on the political front, because she challenged the current administration on its handling of Benghazi, and on its handling of the IRS scandal, and on its handling of the rollout of Obamacare, and on many foreign policy issues, on some of their green energy initiatives like Solyndra. She was blowing the whistle left and right. And I think she's a reporter with great integrity. And she doesn't particularly have an axe to grind politically on one side or another. She's on record as attacking the Bush administration with equal fervor that she is attacking the Obama administration. So she's not mm-hmm. like a conservative, right-wing journalist. She has done a lot of investigative journalism about cover-ups in the vaccine industry. And I really believe she, some people who are anti-vaccine, I think they come to it from a very emotional angle. They're sort of anti-medicine. They don't want to take any medicine ever. They want, and that's a little extreme. But she is someone who has seen a lot of cover-up, a lot of deception, a lot of spinning coming from spokespersons of the pharmaceutical industry and the government on the vaccines. And clearly, while maybe in the aggregate vaccines protect a lot of people, there's still some problems with vaccines. And we have to be open-minded about that and not just say, look, just shut up, everybody line up, stick your arm out. There's nothing to see here, folks. Just move along like sheep. Mm-hmm. So that's my comment. It's a tough issue because, there's no more combustible issue in medicine than vaccination, anti-vaccination. I have a cousin who is a pediatrician, and she and I are about the same age. And when we get into a discussion about vaccination, she gets nuts because she just doesn't want to introduce any doubt in the minds of the parents that she sees with their kids, because then they will refuse vaccines. And we're actually seeing a comeback of some bad diseases like whooping cough. That's and measles and mumps, because upscale progressive parents are saying, oh no, I don't want to do the vaccine, and some of these diseases mm-hmm. are returning. So it's a dilemma, and I don't know what precisely the answer is. But there you have it. All right, let's take a break at this point, because we divide these podcasts into two parts. Stipulate okay. This is part one of today's Q&A with Layla. When we return, give us a preview of what we're going to hear.
Should boron be in a multivitamin? Isn't it estrogenic?
All right. Good question. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin answering your questions. It's Q&A with Layla. And we wish you a very happy holiday and encourage you to listen to part two of today's Intelligent Medicine podcast. We'll be right back.